Hello and welcome to the blah blah. I feel like this. We need a name for
the bonus pod,
the bonus companion, like the break room,
the experience of the corporation,
X Corp break room.
I hear break room and I think Severance break room, but that might just be me. Yeah. I like calling it the break room.
Is there waffles in the break room?
No, dang, it's much bleaker. I like break room. I'm happy with break room.
Okay.
So we'll have to announce that we've called it that too.
Well, then we could make this the first part, and then like the theme comes in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was us announcing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Hello and welcome to the X Corp Break Room, the show where we talk about the podcast that we already made and some other not related topics. I'm here with a bunch of my friends that also make the Experience Corporation and other RMU stuff. Hi, friends.
Hi.
Hello.
Should we do
introduction? Yeah.
Okay, then.
Oh, me first. I'm your oldest sister, Vanessa Thurlow.
I'm your littlest step cousin, Caleb.
I'm not going to participate in this bit. I'm Sam.
I'm your cousin. Kate.
Cousin Kate.
Cousin Kate. I'm the neighbor, Len.
You're the Wilson of the situation.
Yeah, I'm not related to anyone here.
Anyways, Arc 2.
What is your core memory about this episode, whether it's like listening through or production?
Yeah, there's like really like Patricia and Simone are very large supporting characters.
Like all of the supporting cast in this episode hold more space than like all of the supporting cast in the first arc.
Yeah. And like I like it. I think also like just being who I am when I listen back, since it's the first one we did, I'm like, it was hard to do in many ways because we had to figure out many things. Scoring it was a challenge, not just because I was figuring out how to score, but also because I had to figure out things that worked within this courtroom. There were weird mic issues on this one that I had to figure out that weren't on other ones, and it was also the first one I was figuring this out on. It was just like a lot of things. And so like I maybe spent way more time on this episode compared to others, which is very much influencing my opinion of it.
Yeah, I just remember recording this one. It's a lot of Delmont dialogue, a lot of specific details. Also, Delmont as like a lawyer needed to sound kind of like an authority. And it was like a balance between, okay, we're figuring out Delmont's character, but then also Delmont is kind of entering like this different persona of like, I listen to a lot of court procedurals, so I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm talking about. And like, also then keeping the audience interested during all that dialogue. But it was fun. I think it was a challenge. Also a challenge like very early on too. But I definitely remember listening to it and being like, oh, this is dramatic. And I like that it's like a look into the Three Cloud City bureaucracy too. I feel like we really, like in the first arc, we get a sense for how X Corp kind of works. And the second arc is really like, this is the world that X Corp is in.
I feel like this one, because it's so talking or dialogue driven, it's so talking, period, that like I definitely had a lot of insecurities about it. I was like, is this going to work? Like, I don't know. But I really like the court scenes. The whole second half, I think, is really strong. The opening with Patricia, who serves start to finish.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like a different type of villain, like someone that really is able to get under Delmont's skin, which I think is fun.
Yeah, and that was really fun to play off of too, because like we were all in the studio together recording that. So that was, yeah, that it honestly, like, even though it was challenging, that was fun to record. Delmont had a lot of...
Sam, what did you notice on your listen through this morning?
So Yeah, when I first listened to this, like, the, like, as it was coming out, right? I was really into it. I was really into it because I really loved the characters and I liked the courtroom dynamic and I liked how, as someone who like grew up watching just like a ton of Law and Order, like I appreciated the sort of like setup courtroom thing a lot. Like it just, that felt very familiar and fun for me. And I think the thing that I really enjoy most about this episode is just that all the characters involved, Grandpa, Patricia, Judge Mint, Bistek, Solobov Bistek, yeah, that's his name, Simone. It's just like a really fun cast of characters who are in very different places. Listening to it this morning, I definitely like, I think the excitement of the courtroom scene, I didn't feel as strongly because like I had heard it before and like I knew where the argument was going. So I was like, and of course I knew where it was going when I was writing it, but like, when I first listened to it, I was like, yeah, like this is like, this is what we can do. This is what X Corp is for. Yeah. And so I was like, all right, well, I know where this is headed and I know like the surprise twist and everything else. But I think really the thing that, that consistently gets me, I love the last scene in this episode at the birthday party. It's just this really nice, sweet, quiet moment in an episode that's pretty, you know, relatively goofy. I mean, they're all relatively goofy, but I really appreciate the moment of sweetness at the end. That consistently lands with me.
I agree. It's one of the softest moments, like, in the podcast, period.
I really like Simone's big scene when she's on the stand and is like, has to testify against Delmont. That scene always gets me. I'm like, oh,
yeah. I think the beats of the courtroom scene, they work really well because the setup, like all of the different characters have sort of had their little spotlight already. You've gotten to know Judge Mint, you've gotten to see Patricia, you gotten to see Simone, and then like seeing it all applied. I feel like even though the farcical nature of the courtroom scene is my favorite part, like the emotional beats and the sort of Delmont arc are definitely the core of it. This episode also has some of my favorite jokes.
Such as?
Well, I think Judge Mint is just hilarious.
Yeah, funny end to end.
Yeah, writing for Judge Mint is one of the most pleasurable things I have done for this podcast.
Yeah, Judge Mint's great. The one that really stands out to me is the it just made me chortle this morning was like where Judge Mint's like, oh, I'm sorry, was this an exclusive sidebar? Which is just such a like, I think one of the reasons I like it so much is because it's so inherent to the medium, right? Like if you think about what that would look like in a physical space, it's completely absurd. It's like Judge Mint would have to like get down from the podium and like go join. But in audio, it makes a lot of sense. And then I think it's even funnier when you like, I always picture Judge Mint like leaning over the podium and like stretching his body down. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, was this, and then whew, back to the podium. I keep saying podium. I do not know what the judge's area is called. I'm sure it has a name.
I am a big fan of the flashbacks where there will be no flashbacks in my courtroom.
No.
Yeah. It's also like that seems so funny too, because it's like Judge Mint doesn't really get angry like that, except for that moment. That's like really the line for Judge Mint, which is just really funny.
The like, in the first part, there's a joke where they just get to Cloud Court and Delmont's like, hey, we need to be like chill, we need professional. And Cameo's like, that's exactly what I am. And then squeaks all the way across the floor while like apologizing. It gets me every time. And we spent too much time like honing in the squeaks.
Yes, yeah, you were the mayor of Note City on the squeaks.
I was, because I was like, this bit is so important to me. and it's so audio and timing dependent.
Yeah. Because I was like, these squeaks are so unpleasant to hear. So I kept having them kind of low. And you were like, no, the squeaks need to be loud.
They need to be bad and loud. Yeah. Do you remember any jokes from this episode?
Just the lines. There's so many lines and the docs and procs. I think my clearest memories are just enunciating docs and procs proc. Was this the episode where I was also pronouncing balaclava as baklava?
Oh, no, that's later.
Purple
purple balaclava.
Isn't that the next season finale? Yeah. Heads up, fans. There's going to be a balaclava in the next season.
I had a time pronouncing it.
Yeah. Pronouncing it? You had a time pronouncing it? Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry.
Destroy.
Thanks for trusting me to do this. I really appreciate it. thanks for leaving me.
I'm so happy for this opportunity.
Kate, did you think anything was funny in the episode?
Why do you say it like that?
You've been oddly quiet over there.
I mean, I thought the same things were funny that everyone else. Like the judgment lines, I was going to say those.
Yeah.
That's the problem of going last.
I feel like there was a Simone part that always gets me too. That's like very funny.
I love waterbed in the first part.
Oh, Simone's latex allergy.
There's some part where she literally just goes, oh. And it always gets me. I can't remember. Like, I feel like there's some line she just responds like, all right. And it just kills me.
There's definitely something really endearing about Simone as like this character who just doesn't know a lot about the world, but is like very smart and like curious, you know? Like, that always comes through for me in that character, is that she's just like, she's just trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
Which
and
I really appreciate.
Maya killed that character.
Maya Mal, wonderful performer. And she's incredible in that role.
I was watching I Think You Should Leave comp on YouTube. She's in that?
Wild.
Wow.
Wait, what's I Think You Should Leave?
The Tim Robinson sketch thing.
Oh. She was like a machine when we were recording.
Was.
Like, just gave like three very distinct, very good takes. And then, like, if I had a note, which was rare, would just, like, nail it and then move on. It was, like, some of the shortest and most effective recording.
Yeah. And she also, like, at work in, like, a weird, like, soundproof work area pod thing at work? And I was like,
Yeah, it was, like, a WeWork podcasting room type vibe.
Yeah. Like, I could not get in my zone in that space. So that's extra impressive.
Yeah. I really love the function of Simone setting up some like the world building of like robots, touching on that lore, and finding that balance of like making, like, I didn't want it to be like, oh, she's dumb and doesn't know anything. It's like more of a innocent curiosity.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're born with like an adult mind, but like you still, like, gotta learn stuff.
Yeah, I think that this episode, one thing it really does well, and another reason why I might be a little like disengaged, is because these are all things that are like I've lived in so long, is like the world building in so many aspects. Like, we see a lot of Three Cloud City in it, like the way the Umbrella District is, the way that the government works, the robots in the world. Like, it's a lot of world building in a pretty short amount of time.
You want to talk about robots?
I mean, we had some things about robots that, because, like, I think that's something Cade and I had, like, one of the things is, like, we didn't want it to be, like, we wanted robots to effectively just be other people.
Yeah, like, I feel like a lot of media that has robots in it has to have some weird, like, cultural thing where they're, like, oppressed in some way, and I'm just like, please, I don't want this in any manner.
And then, like, so the Soul Heart thing, I think maybe came about from, like, maybe my own reservations about, like, if they can just be built, that's weird to me. Like, if you can just manufacture sentient life without any
limitation, yeah, really.
Like, that's weird. And so I don't know how the soul heart of a creature who's recently deceased, I don't know how that all came about, really. And I know Caleb had some reservations about that because it had some weird organ harvesty.
Yeah. Well, it was moving the, like, from, like, sort of it being just soft lore, yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then when getting into the, like, applications, even if you don't focus on the crunch, you sort of have to have, like, know how it sort of operates to be able to,
yeah,
picture it or, like, portray it authentically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt organ harvesty.
Yeah,
in which a weird it way is,
but yes, like
it
but
literally,
it's consensual.
Yeah,
yes.
And I think of it as like a little orb of light floating above your body once you die. That is the soul heart, and then the blue hearts come up and they just go, "Oh, put it in the little cooler, take it to the factory where they get put in robots randomized." I feel like, do we like specify that, like I feel like there's like some really hard lore things about robots that just like don't get got into in the episode because they did not need to be, about how, like, one thing I thought that was really important was to establish that, like, this soul heart is effectively an energy source that provides sentient life. It is not the individuality of the person who died. You're not put into a robot and the person you were before.
That's like the heart part,
yeah,
of the soul heart.
Exactly. And it's mostly just like a energy source that provides the spark of life.
Yeah. It's very like reincarnation sort of a,
yeah,
vibe.
Yeah. And I think that like once a robot is at the end of their life cycle, the soul heart has probably been
how long do robots live for?
Exactly 55 years. No, that's a joke. I don't know.
So they can't retire. No Medicaid,
exactly,
for you.
And Kay was saying that it's not a subjugation thing. They lied.
There was an idea early on where we were like, because Brenda also opens the episode,
yes,
who is a robot, because themes of robots and like what robots are just sort of sprinkled in subtly throughout.
Episode one, we got the guard robot. Like we wanted, I really wanted to establish some robots in the first episode.
Because there's like a lot of them.
There are a lot of them. And they're not just a tool for us to use a voice actor in multiple characters, but that sure as heck was helpful.
There's so many times we were just like, well, these voices are the same. Let's make one of them a robot.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
I know there is, I cannot remember who, but like usually that was within one voice actor. There was one time where two actors sounded too similar and I had to make one of them a robot and I can't remember who.
Yeah. There was an idea early on that we would see like, we would go like to a robot factory, but it all felt very crunchy. And just like,
when you say crunchy, specify.
When I say crunchy, I mean like it's like the hard sci-fi of it all, like getting into like the morality and the like social implications,
the hard and rules of how it works too.
Yeah, all, yeah, of that, which is fun, but it has to be earned in, mm-hmm, a way that we definitely didn't earn it in season one, maybe towards the end, but like,
yeah.
And it also, yeah, it wasn't the vibe. Like we didn't, like sci-fi magic is like one aspect, but at the core, this is like a buddy workplace, mm-hmm, sort of comedy adventure romp.
Yeah, I'm telling a little anecdote, then we can get back into it, because I keep forgetting to mention this. But Kate and I were walking back from, like, getting tea or something, and you know how, especially on Broadway, there are people who are, like, I think they're with, like, the Human Rights Campaign or something, and they want to talk to you. And so they, like, usually start by saying something really nice from, like, far distance.
Yeah.
And so we're, like, 30 feet away, and they look at us, and they're like, hey, how's it? And I'm like, she's breaking up with me right now. And the look on this person's face.
That is a great bit.
They just
so
shut
funny.
Them the fuck
yeah,
down.
Yeah, the guy was just like, oh.
That is such a good.
It was so funny.
Max says that if you're like walking past them, compliment their outfit because it takes up that like 1 second that they're going to say something to you, and then you're already like out the window.
Oh, and then like you use like, oh my god, I love your shirt.
Like,
that is
oh.
so funny.
Well, maybe not because I was just wearing
that's really nice
shirts, but like that the hair nice. Or something.
Yeah, that's better than what I do. I'm just like, I have an appointment.
I'm just like, no.
Oh, one time one of them was like,
especially not the human rights campaign.
Wait, I need to hear that.
I think one of them was like, are you like in the mood to talk right now? And I was like, no. And then she was like, I respect that. And then I was like, thanks. And then that was it.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
When I used to do like calling work, like campaigning work, I once got like a robot, like a recorded message that just like was like, oh, I ate too many beans. And then just like did a bunch of fart noises. And I was like,
no.
I was like, I love that you have your inbox set up to just be like, way too many beans.
And in that moment, you were like, I need to make sure this man votes.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I need to set mine up to do that.
Yeah, really funny.
That's so funny. Okay. Anyways, arc two.
I guess I'm wondering what Cameo's reaction to being in this space is like and dealing with all these docs and procs. Like, is he into it? Is he not into it? Is he just there for the experience? Is it a little too much for him? Is it not enough?
You know, I always imagine this Cameo's kind of internal thoughts in this episode. There's one is like, once Simone is introduced, he's like mostly excited about like Simone and playing the birthday party. But also, I think Cameo recognizes that this is exciting for Delmont and is like, I'm going to let Delmont be excited about this for the experience. So I think that Cameo is mostly focused on Delmont and excited for Delmont to be doing these things and like, you know, being like a courtroom star and everything else. Yeah, I mean, the docs and the procs for Cameo, it's not that exciting. But, you know, Cameo will take any opportunity to, like, talk to someone. So, like the Clark the Cleric or whoever else, like, that's fun for Cameo. But it's really more just, like, it's, like, you know, taking your child to, like a Disneyland. It's more fun because you get to see your kid having fun.
Yeah.
And Cameo does think of Delmont as his child.
It's just funny because Delmont is, I feel like, for that episode, so stressed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, so maybe this is my Cameo, but I thought that Delmont was, like, in the zone.
Definitely in the zone, but I think there's, like, an undercurrent of, oh, my God, are we going to be able to complete this assignment on time? And then all the run-ins with Patricia. I think to Delmont, it feels like nothing is going right.
Right.
And especially for something like that's very docs and proxy that they're used to. And suddenly there's all these wacky elements thrown in there that are not.
I don't think Cameo is like capable of thinking that the assignment isn't going to go right.
But yeah,
like,
that's
I don't
true.
Think that there's a moment where he's like, oh, yeah, this is really we're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
It's all about the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in these first few episodes, there's a lot of like mentor. There's a lot of like mentor Cameo. And I feel like the divide, even though you're both like working together, like the whole episode is like the perspective and the motivations on like Simone versus like beating Patricia versus completing the assignment. Which I think is interesting.
Yeah. I think that there's a cut scene where they like really, they were like at a party store and it really,
yeah,
it really got in on that, but maybe a little too on the nose.
Because
Delmont
right.
just wanted to go home and Cameo yeah. was like, no, we got to go to the party store.
Was it for
Get
balloons?
Balloons. Non-latex balloons.
I think there's a line like that still where Cameo is like, I want to go to the party store. And Delmont's like, why? And Cameo's like, because we're throwing a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that line probably accomplished everything that a 3-minute scene would have as the thing.
Yeah. It definitely got cut for time. But I was like, there's the beat, like this conversation, this back and forth needs to happen. Because, like, I think what Delmont says specifically is like, why are you always trying to do so much for assignments? because like Delmont's still in a very like check the box, go home mm-hmm. kind of a mindset. And like I think learns that, I don't know, this job has the potential to actually like, you know, do some good. It's not like some like noble profession, but like you can make some people happy and then maybe through the X Corp machine make some other people happy down the line.
Yeah.
Like the big birthday speech at the end, Delmont kills it. Like the big
oh yeah
closing statements. Do you just put quotation marks?
No, I snapped.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like
kills and I was like, it.
What?
No. No, I really like how that birthday scene turned out. I really like how the music and the diegesis of them moving about the space came together for a very simple scene to kind of draw it very physically. I think that that was like something like fun and challenging about this one. Like there's a lot of spaces that were created very physically instead of like, I don't know, a cloud racer. You know, these big sound moments. This one was very subtle. And once again, it being the first one we did, that was extra hard.
Yeah, but it turned out so well. Like, it really it had such a different tone from the rest of the episode. It really did feel like we were on a roof watching the sunset, which sonically, I don't even know how that's possible.
Yeah, but sunrise sounds a very specific way, actually. Mm-hmm. It turns
out. You captured it perfectly.
Yeah, people don't know this because most people are asleep, but you can hear the sun come up.
This is, I think it's fun that, like, arc one and arc two both start in, like, the pod.
Yeah,
room.
I thought that that was going to be something we were doing for most of them, which we did not.
If I was like, I don't, because it takes up too much time.
Yeah. Super fair.
And like later on, it's like we don't, really need to check in as much. And then like the con episode, the opening bit is like at X Corp, but like not X Corp. Like the break room specifically. And then like the fourth episode doesn't have an assignment.
Is Leslie, outside of Bingo Samland, Leslie's not in season two much.
Is in the finale a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, arcing back to like when I was first like having notions about this series, I initially envisioned it as much more episodic. And like, I really wanted like every episode to kind of come back to this like resting place. Like, I remember initially I wanted to end every episode with, like, Delmont doing, like, a log recap with, like, specific music under it.
Yeah.
Very
Doogie Howser.
Yeah, I wanted a very, well, I've never, sure.
No one's seen Doogie Howser?
I know Doogie.
Thank you, Sam.
I just didn't have a response.
Here, can I get your Doogie response?
I just didn't have a response to Doogie. I am familiar with Doogie.
What did you, because, like, I mean, the episodes are still very episodic, but you're right. They don't. There's serialized bits that got added on through production.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, but like, yeah, I initially imagined it so much more. And like, that's why having people who are actually good writers take over from very early in the production process is so key.
I feel like having arc one and arc two both start in the meeting room sort of like earned us that like, oh, like whenever they get an assignment, like this is what it looks like. Like,
yeah.
And once you've seen that enough, like it's sort of always there.
It's implied. As like,
yeah, exactly.
Agreed.
I agree.
When we were first like plotting these first three arcs, which Len touched on this already a little bit, Cloud Court was really about trying to like expand like the perspective of Three Cloud City and sort of paint it as this very like eclectic mishmash city of like different parts that have very distinct characteristics.
Yeah. And also like that kind of, you kind of were bringing this concept of thinking of the first three episodes as kind of extended pilots, like taking the three of those to establish three different aspects of the characters and show and world instead of trying to cram all of that into one, that I think was very instrumental in the creation of the episode.
The other, like, thing that I was thinking about when we were talking about these first three arcs was, like, what are the sort of three mini lessons that Delmont's going to learn in order to sort of settle into this job?
Visited by three ghosts.
Yes. The Christmas escort past, escort present, escort future.
Escort.
But, like, kind of a bit, but also kind of true. But it was present, future, past.
Oh my god, you're right. Oh my god. That is very true.
I guess it'd be future, present, past.
No, it'd be present, future. Because Patricia's like what Delmont would be.
Oh yeah, I see.
Like, committed to just being an utilitarian asshole.
I see. So can you?
I shouldn't say that. Butthole.
Oh, someone else gets their first censorship, please.
Yay.
Yeah, so Cameo would be the ghost of X-Corp present. Patricia, the gope of X, but Patricia would be the ghost of X-Corp future. And Billy is the ghost of Delmont past.
Yes.
Beautiful.
We did that intentionally, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, tune in for our Great Expectations extended four-piece arc. It's going to be really great, really exciting.
Which one is Tiny Tim?
Christmas Carol.
No, which one? Oh. Like, who?
Simone is probably Tiny.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Tiny Tin.
Tiny Tin.
Because she's made out of metal.
That's Tiny Tin.
I recently rewatched The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Oh my god, I started to watch it, like, on Christmas Eve. But then it made me too sad.
Oh.
Because I was
alone with COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you would really like that movie.
I liked it, but I was like, this makes me feel horrible right now. Yeah, so no, thank you.
I was also sick when I watched it. I had a fever and I was like, I should watch Muppet the Christmas Carol. It's really good.
Because Vanessa wrote the first draft of this episode.
We
wrote the first draft?
Oh, you, I. French for yes.
Oh. and the, like, earliest draft, there was this bit where the scene with Grandpa was a lot longer.
There was a lot more Grandpa.
And Grandpa almost got cut completely, but I was like, no, we are going to shoehorn him in.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the early, like, Zoom call laughs that we got, was just, like, playing around with Grandpa as a character.
Yeah, I can't even remember. What all did he do? Because I know that, like, there were a lot of changes.
He owned a copy center. And then that's Cameo, the flyers that they were hanging. Like, you wrote it, which is a very linear way of, like, oh, you need flyers. So they go and get flyers.
Yeah.
And was, like, weirdly aggressive towards Delmont.
Oh my god, there was so many funny
that.
Lines.
Yeah.
There was, like, because, like, there was this, like, weird aside. Like, they were, like, very jovial and jokey. And then at the end, they were, like, got it up in Delmont's face and was like, "Arg, the sea will eat ye alive if you do not repent, sinner." Like, that type of energy. Yeah.
It was, like, the same energy as the Georgie bit, where Georgie gets really close to Delmont and just starts, like, whispering intimidating stuff, but in, like, a gravelly pirate voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, people invade Delmont's personal space quite a lot when I think about it.
Yeah.
Delmont gets a lot of threats. But, like, thinly threats that are, I guess, also sort of advice.
Yeah, people, what is a threat if not advice?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get, yes. It does feel very foreshadowing for Delmont, because they are about to get sucked in.
Yeah. I remember my mom specifically asking if Docs and Procs is a real thing. And I was like, if you don't know, I don't know.
Is she looking to go back to school? Is that...
No, I think she just thought it was funny.
It'd be nice if she wanted to get a master's in Docs and Procs now.
Oh my god. I think she's, like, very like, her master's is not in Docs and Procs, the thing. It's in, like, government planning.
Mm.
So if anything, I think that's probably why she asked. Yeah. She's like, if I don't know what this is, like, what is this? So effectively she does. And Patricia, like, when I wrote Patricia, she is kind of evil Karen. Which is, I think my mom knows that.
Do you think it was like, do you think Delmont got like pushback at magic school for minoring in docs and procs? Or do you think that was like encouraged?
That's a great question.
I don't know. Do they like give you pushback at school for minoring in things? I feel like they're kind of just like, yeah, do it, I guess, if you want.
Or it's, I could see it being like, no, if you're 100, if you're devoted to magic, if you're in magic school, you're studying technical magic, why are you also studying docs and procs? You should be doing something that's more appropriate to your major. I guess it is interesting that Delmont has this fascination with forms and documents.
I feel like the way I was thinking about it was like, oh, like they don't care, you're paying them a ton of money, like they'll let you do whatever you want. But I don't think in Ready Made Utopia we have a college system that is like that. And I feel like they would be more like, yeah, that actually doesn't sound good for your career, and we will be genuinely concerned, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely, at least at the very least, confusion. Like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I kind of assume that like magic students like probably are less into the organizational communication stuff and more into like, I don't know, like fancy magic-y things.
Yeah. More
enchanting potions.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Delmont went more technical, whereas I think other techno mages, excuse me, would go more magical with a minor.
Yeah.
I feel like going into magic school, Delmont was probably ahead in the sort of practical application side of things from all the experimenting.
The cloud racing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So maybe they were like, you know what? I really need like a hard backbone to all of this.
Yeah, that's a good point. They were probably like course correcting a little bit from all their delinquency.
Well, I think it's also perhaps foreshadowing of like Delmont's family lineage a little bit too.
Yeah, I could see that being, but we don't want to get
spoilers.
Into
we don't want to get into it too much, but I'm just saying, like, I feel like that's probably popular degree in the Delmont clan.
But I think for Delmont's character, like, school aside, it makes sense that they would study docs and procs and would think that that's something that's really important to know and also really exciting to learn about.
Yeah, I can't speak to it being exciting, but it does seem important.
Yeah,
it does seem useful.
Delmont's excited about it, I would say. I think. That's my headcanon.
I feel like also like some of the magical things Delmont wants to get into maybe have a little bit of government oversight, like with like the creation of life vis-a-vis Top Pal, I think would be regulated by a larger organization, and that knowing your way around the documentation and procedurals of a larger government organization could help them to be able to get some of their projects greenlit.
Yeah, that definitely had to be a part of it. Like, Docs,
Caleb's looking at me like that's such a stretch.
No, I don't. Okay, for Delmont, like Docs and Procs is like doing Sudoku or like doing the crossword puzzle. Like they're like, this is, I love this. But that had to play into it a little bit, I think.
Yeah, it really, I think both of those are true. I just am very charmed by the idea of Delmont being like, this is my fun minor. This is my silly, ridiculous minor. But I think, Vanessa, you're totally right. Like it.
I was just going to say that hearing you say the elongated version of Docs and Procs was like very challenging for me.
It's kind of challenging for me to say it, too.
I was going to say, now you all know, Docs and Procs, it's a bit of a tongue twister.
Docs and Procs. Doc Frock, the Docs and Procs. Pop?
Yeah.
Was that it? Oh, my
Doc
God.
Doc Frock, the Docs and Procs. Doc Frock. Doc Frock, the Docs and Procs prof. There you go.
Yeah.
That could be a bit.
I'm not going to try it again.
The biggest tongue twister of each arc.
Oh, my God. That would be fun.
Last episode, it was DJ Duncan's...
Oh my God. Jesus Christ, what was it?
Decoupage.
Yes. And DJ Duncan's designer decoupage and...
There's a colon in there. He says colon out loud. Digo... Oh my God. DJ... Digo. DJ Duncan's decoupage design colon DJ...
Disc
jockey. I'm not even... Who wrote that, I wonder?
It was me, actually.
It was you?
Yeah.
I assumed it was Sam.
No, I have a soft spot for a tongue twister comedy from BoJack Horseman.
I was going to say it's very BoJack Horseman.
Yeah. There's a couple...
We saw a couple breaking up at Starbucks yesterday while we were waiting for the bus. We were not in Starbucks.
I feel like... like, breaking up in Starbucks? Like, that's really bad. Start.
Yeah, like, we couldn't be positive, but the girl was crying.
Oh, dear.
And then the boy was crying later.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, and really he was, like trying to comfort her, but in this way that was, like... No. I can't comfort you too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, and then
I did it.
Oh.
Do you think they went to the Starbucks to break up, or was it like, let's go to Starbucks and then it happened?
I don't know. First one.
Yeah, because there are merits to a public breakup. That's what I was saying. There are pros and cons to it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done it.
I would rather be broken up over text.
Yeah, no, but like
in public. Tech. Yeah.
I thought it's so there can't be like a scene.
No, because you're causing a scene either way.
I see what you're saying, and that has happened to me before. But I think when they do a public breakup, it's like, okay, neither of us can stay here for too long.
Yeah.
This breakup is happening. Period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're saying it'd be better at a place where you have a limited, because you can stay at a coffee shop a while to break up, but like, are there places where they limit you to like an hour and then someone will come over and kick you out?
No, but I think like a Starbucks, and especially like a Starbucks, you're not really...
Yeah, you're right. It's like not a hard rule, but it's a soft rule.
Yeah.
Starbucks is too busy.
Yeah.
It's just too busy.
Exactly. What? Where would you... Okay, everyone's ideal place to be broken up with?
Funeral home.
Love it. Because they died?
No, it was a joke. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're casket shopping for our own caskets.
Yeah. Right after we buy the joint place to be broken plots.
Place to be favorite place to be broken up with.
I guess like maybe like my mom's house. Because then it's like, oh well, my mom's already here.
That's really cute.
That's really sweet. Yeah.
I feel like a phone call. Is that a bad answer?
No, phone call is good. I feel like people because shit talk a not face to face breakup.
Yeah, I don't want a face to face.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to be like, get out of here.
But, or like.
Get out of here.
Go on.
What was your second one?
Or like, because if you're in person, even if it's a coffee shop, you're like looking at each other and like, oh, we're reminiscing on all the good times. And
yeah. But over a phone call.
Yeah.
Phone call with a script, honestly.
So if Delmont and Cameo had to break up with someone, where would they each choose?
Delmont would ghost. To do it. Cameo would never break up because they're too much of a people pleaser.
That's both opt out. You have to pick. If they were choosing, you have to pick somewhere.
I think Cameo would do like. Like a really fun place, and it's not a good decision, right? But I think Cameo is my like, oh well, we should go somewhere that's like really fun that they love, so that it's like softer, so it's easier.
And then I ruin their favorite place.
Yeah,
it would happen. Yeah,
yeah.
It's
not
a good plan. It's Cameo just, I think, what would do.
Cameo would definitely break up with someone at Bingo Samland.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah,
you'd be crying at Disneyland.
But Cameo hates me.
Oh, that's true.
So, yeah, I was thinking
it would be something.
Well, because
like,
they got broken up with it.
Not specifically what happened. But it would be something like a Bingo Sam Land.
Yeah.
Or like the Living History Museum, or like just some fun place. Like your Play Palace.
Yeah, McDonald's Play Palace is definitely the top of my list of where I'd want to get broken up with. Ball pit. Anywhere with a ball pit. Like leave.
I'm
gonna
be playing that one like GameCube that's in the like the box that never works.
It's half a level of a Sonic game, half a level of a Mario.
It's like,
Sunshine,
hey, so this isn't working out.
Break up with me in the Green Hill Zone.
Delmont. I think either through like a comms message, like not even text, but like
over Slack.
Yeah, like essentially. Yeah, I think it would just be like a communicator. Just tell them it's over and. That or
yo, Delma would use like an auto generated prompt. Like,
GPT,
yeah. Write a breakup for me.
Well, yes.
That's actually really funny. ChatGPT, write a breakup for me.
I'm sure someone's done it.
I'm positive it's happened.
I have one piece of evidence for how it's happened, boys.
I rest my case.
Bring it. Great point.
Yeah. Men.
Tech boys.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Techno magic boys.
Yeah. See Delmont. And I think Delmont would be the. I don't know.
I dump Delmont.
Yeah. I can't blame anyone for that. Delmont's not emotionally available. I could also see Delmont like. Be like, hey, come over. But then like they don't. They just stay outside.
That's exactly the right answer.
Hey, come over. And then there's a note on the door.
why are you waiting for me outside?
Oh my god.
It's like, actually.
I think we just completely nailed it, everyone. Yeah. Great job.
Please, can we use it?
Yes, of course.
Of course.
Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah.
I think that about wraps it up for us. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.
Stream Wish, please, for the love of God.
Yes, Stream Wish. Keep those numbers.
Wish by Opal Voss.
Wish Opal Voss. Put it in your playlist. Show your friends. Show your mom. Your mom won't like it.
Yeah.
Your mom will hate this.
Maybe you need to start some sort of public beef.
With a mom. I want to start streams. Public beef with Charlie XCX.
That's better. I was going to say start public beef with 1 million moms.
Not hard. This is an invitation to 1 million moms across the United States. Beef with me.
You
know where I am.
You heard her.
You know where I work.
If you would like to reach out to us, you can email us at the Experience Corporation.
info@readymadeutopia.com.
That's yours.
But I can forward it to you.
No, but we said the last one.
The Experience Corporation at readymadeutopia.com.
You can email us at...
It's the name of the podcast and the name of the company.
Yes, okay. Give me
one
second. I don't
know where you're getting lost.
It's like... If you'd like to reach out to us, you can email us at theexperiencecorporation@readymadeutopia.com. We could get like a mailbag segment going. So it's in your hands.
If you believe in the mailbag, then we need you to email your support right now.
Someone want to thank the Patreon subscribers?
That sounds like a job for Len.
Thank you all.
Can you get closer to the mic?
Every single time Len has closed out, you've been like,
I think it's funny when Len does it.
Okay, well, I've got to impress now. So thank you to all of the Patreon supporters. Your support means the world to us. We hope you enjoyed tuning in to this X-Corp break room edition of the podcast. And yeah, thank you all so much.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
So what about me doing it is funny, huh?
Make that the ending.
Yeah.